Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey...
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males...
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
Got to work late 'cause my alarm was busted. The boss chewed me out.
Matt, so one of those days, not one of these days, as I may have egregiously said a couple episodes ago.
Oh boy, everyone's been talking about it.
So it's, how is this guy hosting a Weird Al podcast, the internet has said. It is a song detailing horrible things as if they were everyday annoyances. Each horrible thing escalates to global annihilation, while more mundane annoyances pop up at different times. That's the Wikipedia description of it. I just go with this. I think that this is a very early example of a theme that reoccurs constantly in Al's music, which is a song that complains about mild inconveniences and major issues with the exact same level of concern and annoyance.
Yeah, we talked about it a while ago on Slime Creatures from Outer Space.
Yep, Slime Creatures is definitely, I think, the first real big example of that.
Yes, aliens and that then, were decapitating people to Al's mild annoyance.
Yes. And then, I mean, this is a theme that continues over and over and over again. I mean, the first one that jumps to my head is like, why does this always happen to me? But
sure.
There are countless songs of of Al downplaying major catastrophes to upplay the mild annoyance of the major catastrophe.
Yes.
And because I think Al, as we've established already, Al understands the concepts of comedy and what is funny, but there's the biggest thing that is comedy is truth, an element of truth. And unfortunately, truthfully, we're a bunch of selfish assholes, and we focus on our inconvenience of, like, giant global things. Like, the Ukraine is fighting for their own freedom, and we're like, but gas prices!
Or even coming through a pandemic where so many people were like, this means I can't watch the Jets play?
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
Yeah, it does.
Sorry, got some bad news for you. And also, not related to the song specifically, but this is another classic example of the Google genre when you search the lyrics on this song being wildly inaccurate. This one's not as egregious as K-pop, is listed as country music. And like, no.
It's not. Like, so, you know, one of the things that I found in my research, I had no idea. I don't know if you saw this, Matt, but... this is a style parody. So depending on where you look, I saw some places that said, I didn't see the country music one. That is just completely untrue. I also saw it just classed as like a general parody of glam rock, which is like, I guess I hear that. I found online, it is the closest reference to it is inspired by a song by the Kinks.
Oh.
Called Ducks on the Wall.
I mean, I don't know Ducks on the Wall, but
nobody,
I can hear the
I don't
Kinks.
Think anyone in the world knows Ducks on the Wall. It's from their album Soap Opera, which is kind of late for them, certainly past what most people would consider the heyday of the Kinks. But if you listen to Ducks on the Wall by the Kinks, holy cow, is it very similar to this. Instant recognition. And actually, hearing that in the lead up to this episode made me appreciate the vibe of this song more, because I always felt like I never could clock what this felt like to me. It didn't feel like an Al thing. It didn't feel like an Al original, like I expect from him, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It felt like it was referencing something that I couldn't place, and now I have it. So if you were like me and didn't know that, check out Ducks on the Wall by the Kinks. Maybe, Matt, you can insert a moment of it into this episode for our lazy listeners who can't be bothered to go on YouTube.
I agree with you. There was something about this song, and, you know, people who are listening, you might even just look at the episode length and get at least a rough idea that this is maybe not top tier Al original for me, at least. I can't speak for both of us, but it's not a bad song either. And I think you just nailed it. I can't really put my finger on how I feel about this song.
Yeah.
Because I would say that there are Al originals that it's either the stuff that we've already thrown all of the praise in the world on. The Dare to Be Stupids, the Dog Eat Dogs, that are just like such perfect style parodies of the artist that is being attributed to,
yeah,
that just like floor you. But then there's ones that we maybe haven't gotten into yet. But
yeah,
we'll say that the next album has at least two songs that I can think of that I wouldn't really say that they are a style parody of anything specific, but it's exactly what I imagine an Al Yankovic original
totally
to sound like.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, where it's just like, this makes sense to me. Like, if I'm like, Al's going to sit down and write an original song, it would sound like a lot of the songs that appear on Even Worse that aren't style parody songs.
Yeah,
this felt off.
That's exactly it. You're hitting on something. Like, when we went back to, if we go back to In 3D, we talked about how Midnight Star, that's an Al original.
Exactly.
That feels like, that has this palpable sense of like, that's his voice coming through both lyrically and musically. We said the same thing about Nature Trail to Hell, and I feel that completely as well. Very much him. This, for the longest time, I was like, this doesn't feel like him to me. It's kind of straightforward. It's kind of simple. And I don't mean this as a slight. I mean this more as like just an actual like example. Like musically, it's like a little dumb. It's just like, like, it's just kind of like samey the whole time. And it's not as, it's like, it doesn't have a lot of finesse to it.
It doesn't even have really, it has a hook for sure.
Yeah.
For the, it's one of those days, but
just
that's
one
it.
Of those,
it's not
one
like,
of those days. It's the
yeah,
hook
it's,
I like,
it's not
actually
a chorus or anything else. It's just this one line that's sang a specific way that gets into your ear. But like, I genuinely listened to this song three times less than an hour ago, and I couldn't sing for you the verses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No,
like,
And so, but now with the Kinks thing, first of all, another interesting point to make, right? Okay, so we're coming off of Dare to Be Stupid, which had
Yoda
on it. We're on this, which is a Kinks style reference, and
a deep cut one.
A deep cut one. And coming up soon on the same record, another Kinks style reference on Don't Wear Those Shoes, which is crazy.
Well, it's crazy, but also let's not forget that when we were doing the episode on Yoda, he said like he was trying to come up with a song to tie in to Yoda.
Yeah.
And it was his friend that suggested Lola. And Al said, I can't believe I didn't come up with that myself because they're one of my favorite bands. So this is like prime example of like, he's not just saying that to be nice.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
probably
he's definitely
not. Very much a Kinks fan. And based on the artist that we've talked about, that like when he goes for it and does a style parody of an artist he loves, like it makes sense. I can see, similarly to how I can enjoy the Kinks, Devo, and Talking Heads, of course Al would also enjoy those three bands.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
they all have a little bit of this edginess to them in their style.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if this was also, I wonder if that came out of like two Kinks references on one record, fairly obscure ones. I wonder if this was like a time crunch for him in some way. I wonder if this was like him not having as much time to explore different ideas, and he just kind of like hit the same I don't know. It's rare that you see him make the same reference twice like that.
Especially
and he did
on
it
one
obscure
album.
Enough.
Yeah.
I also keep thinking about in this conversation how when we talked about cable TV and I found online,
Hercules.
Yeah, Hercules, but Bermuda himself saying that cable TV was what they considered a failed attempt at an Elton John style parody. And I don't have the same evidence, but I wonder if they would say the same about this. Because it feels like usually when Al does a style parody, he likes that. I think if Al's proud and the band are really proud of a style parody, I think they are happy to promote it as such. The fact that this has not been said, maybe it is a testament, or maybe they're being coy about it because they don't want to, they feel like they didn't quite hit the mark. And so then it becomes like an Al original by default, when in fact it started in a different way.
So
purely speculative on my part, but you know, maybe
I'm going to continue to speculate though with something else. I'm going to say a name and at least half of our listening audience will immediately know who this artist is. And the other half will have no clue. Are you familiar with who Jim Johnston is?
I am not.
Okay. Jim Johnston was for 3 decades, I want to say, the main man who created all of the music for the WWF. He wrote every single wrestler's. Yeah, he wrote all of the wrestlers' entrance themes, all of that.
He's the man behind the Full Metal album that I grew up listening to?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So I heard a story where someone was interviewing him, and he said when he was writing a song for a wrestler, he would ask the wrestler to give him one or two songs that if they could afford to pay for that song as their entrance theme, that's what they would want. And then he would try to take the essence of those songs and boil it down to something that was original. And
wow.
The example that he gave, and think about this, the example he gave was Stone Cold Steve Austin gave him Bulls on Parade by Rage Against the Machines. And it's like, you think about the Stone Cold theme song, it's like, yeah, like it's got the wah pedal thing going. Like it's got those elements in it. Well, I'm giving this example to say, I wonder sometimes if Al just sends the band songs and he goes, I'm working on a song. This is what I'm really hearing in my head.
Yeah.
Can we get an approximation of this? Maybe not like an exact one for one, but like how close can we get to this sound without us actually saying, hey, we're doing a Kinks song.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, that's something I'm not super familiar with. I don't know what the writing process is in Al's world.
Yeah,
I
would love to know.
He does demos alone. Like there's different ways people do this. Like Al might do a solo demo of a track and then give it to the band and then say, here's the song, but I want it to sound like Elton John. I want it to sound like the Kinks, whatever it is. And then lets the band do their own studying and figure out what they can do to hit those marks as best as possible for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
I'd love to, you know, coming off of the Complete Al, and this, I mean, this is just a young kid with a head full of dreams and hopes, but you know, seeing how much fun that band seems to have either A, when they're playing live, like when they show us actual live footage, or even B, when they're just pretending to be live, like the opening scene.
Sure.
Like I want to, in my heart of hearts, believe that band is collaborators together. You know what I mean? Like I'm sure that Al is undeniably the engine that drives most of the ideas and all of that. But like, I would love the idea of like Al sitting down and like sending them some kink songs and saying like, here's the rough idea that I have. And then them meeting up at a practice space and Jim West just like laying down a guitar riff.
Yeah.
And Steve J starting to like fill in what the bass line should be. And then Bermuda pulls the drums out. And then as they're playing that jam, Al's like, okay, I know how this song's going to go. And he's like in the corner, like scratching down the lyrics as they're rocking out as like the band practices I used to hang out at in high school would go. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I want to imagine that world, at least in these early, like, 80s records where they're still young and hungry.
Totally, yeah. It's interesting. I really don't know. I mean, the one thing I would say is, as we said, the same band for all these years. These guys obviously love each other and get along very well to have sustained this kind of a working relationship over decades. And in my experience, usually that comes with more than anything else, more than how collaborative it is or isn't, is just everyone being on the same page and understanding the mission statement and knowing what needs to happen with as little ego as possible. You know what I mean? Like that's they are there to support each other and to make the best thing imaginable. And maybe it's both ways. You know, maybe sometimes Al needs help figuring out an instrumental idea. And I'm sure other times there are examples where Al is just like, here is a complete song. Jim, here's what you're playing. Steve, here's what you're playing. That's it. I'm sure that happens. I'm sure that happens. Because that's, you know, almost any band will have some songs like that where they just, you know, arrive in various stages of completion in your head, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, oh, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
The song's funny enough. There's a couple good lines. There's a couple good rhymes.
It is funny. I'm intrigued that we're both a little bit lukewarm. I do know people who adore this song.
No, this is what I think is a fan favorite to some people.
I think it is a fan favorite to some. And again, I like it fine. I just find it sort of unremarkable, which I feel like is a word that I used. Or I said uninspired about living with a hernia, and to a degree I feel like this is the same, although I do like the lyrical idea. I love the joke of the song, and as you pointed out earlier, I feel like this is just a joke that comes back and is done much better later on in his career.
I know that we try not to hold it up to the light of...
It's not fair to compare it to 30. Why does this always happen to me? But
if, why has this always happened to me is such a better...
It's a much better executed concept. Version of essentially the same joke. Yeah, yes. Agreed. And it's better. So it's musically, it's a more interesting song musically. The melody is better. All that stuff. To me, that song is it hits every mark a little bit better. Spoilers for several years from now when we get to that song.
Yeah. But if we're not even going to compare it to new stuff and just what we've already tackled, Slime Creatures is still a better take on the same concept.
I like Slime Creatures more than this. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, like Slime Creatures is more musically interesting.
Totally.
And the lyrics are almost funnier by the total disregard of what's happening. You know what I mean? Like where it's talking about these creatures coming and decapitating humanity
and bursting
through his door and him being like, but I just shampooed the rug. Like, like there's something that's like so unaffected by the chaos in that one. But this, I mean, this is good. Like this isn't going to be living in the bottom of my list for sure.
No. There's some good, I'm looking at the lyrics again. I like that there's some real like intense references in this that like, the Nazis tied me up and covered me with ants. Also, in the verse after that, the bank called me up and told me I'm overdrawn and some freaks are burning crosses out on my front lawn. It's like, wow, dude, there's some real...
Well, there's a big steamroller just ran over my mom and I cut myself shaving and then they're dropping
and they're
the
dropping
bomb.
The bomb. Another, you know, actually, yeah, then late at night, just before I go to bed, the world blows up and now everybody's dead. We haven't gotten to it yet, but when we do, a good glimpse at the state of the world at the time that he made this record is this and Christmas at Ground Zero.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, oh, we're all gonna die.
Which two songs about how grim the world looked at this moment in time in the mid 80s.
So let me throw this out there, and this could be Matt the Eternal Optimist or Matt the Fool.
Yes.
But is there a little bit of comfort in knowing that also in 1986, everyone thought that the world was doomed and was going to end any moment? That
oh,
makes
absolutely.
You feel
absolutely.
A little bit less like, oh, God, maybe. Like, things are bad.
I'm not downplaying that.
No.
This is a line I think about a lot, and I don't know the exact quote on the spot right now, but it was a line in the first season of True Detective that I really loved that I think Matthew McConaughey said, or maybe it was Woody Harrelson, I can't remember, but some guy is saying to him like, oh man, I tell you what, this world is going to hell, you know, but when I was growing up, things like this didn't happen. And he just says, old people have been saying that since the dawn of time, that the world is about to end and that it used to be better. And somehow we're all still here. And, and also I always like to remind myself as well, generally speaking, look at charts about overall quality of life, life expectancy, all of these things about the world. Generally speaking, humanity is on an upward trend. If you zoom out enough, obviously things that make us fall feel really dramatic, but yeah, I mean, we have collectively survived a lot.
Yeah. My the girl who hosts Before My Time, Gelsey Laurie, always says, like, I will take 2029's modern medicine over going back in time where leeches are how they solve my
absolutely
sickness. Like, yeah, like,
and it's not, you know, that's not to say that you should be complacent about not wanting to move forward as fast and as aggressively as we can. We all should be like moving towards creating a better future for ourselves where we don't feel like the world is about to end every few years. But yeah, no, it is. I do find it comforting that in the mid 80s, Al seems really confident that it's all almost over. And it turned out, we made it through.
It's why I have zero patience for nihilism. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to feel doom and gloom and use that to, like, motivate yourself to, like, go out there and make a change in the world. I just have zero patience for, like, well, it's all going to end anyway, so why should I
even
try?
So who cares? Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, like, it's like, I don't have the bandwidth for that thought
totally
process.
Totally.
But I do have the bandwidth to see where I rank one of those days. So I am definitely putting it lower on the list, kind of in the middle, but for sure over time, I don't think it's going to be rising as much as it's falling.
Sure.
Just knowing what else is on the horizon. I'm going to put this kind of right where my normal perimeter is, right below Happy Birthday and above Cable TV. Happy Birthday, I think, is even a song that covers a lot of the similar themes, but in a much more interesting way. Obviously, not so much the mild annoyance, but Happy Birthday is also a very doom and gloom type song, but just presented in a funnier way and in a much more interesting musical package than One of Those Days.
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm struggling. Another just super random, but I just noted he also references tater tots in this song, which makes two tater tots references on this record. I mean, how many people can say that? How many records are diving into tater tots at this level?
That's true. If you change my mind, it's going to the top of the
list. Oh, God.
So
there
you
go.
So long, dare to be stupid.
The double tater tot has pushed it. No. Don't change your mind, because I think I'm going to rank this lower than you. I don't hate it, but it's just so unremarkable. I'm going to put it in between Cable TV and Such a Groovy Guy.
All right. And I want to stress something, because you did mention this. I mean, even looking at my bottom of everything right now.
Yeah.
I don't hate Brady Bunch, nor do I hate Got a Boogie. I don't love any of those songs, but I don't think that we've really tackled a song that is like offensively bad to me. And I don't think we ever will. I don't think Al has done a song that is so heinous that I'm just like, what? Like, because look, I've done TV show podcasts. I've watched some movies for Horror Movie Night. I have seen things and listened to things.
I've
where
seen
like,
things
this
you
is...
people wouldn't believe.
Yeah, but look, you and I are both fans of horror movies. You have to sit through some real shit.
Oh, it's tough.
Sometimes
it is tough. Sometimes I agree. There's nothing, it's funny because I definitely went pretty hard on I Want a New Duck, which will never
be my
favorite.
It's a fun thing for us to refer back to constantly.
I know.
It's a bad song.
Well, it was funny because we did it, and I remember us saying, like, I don't think Al loves this song either. Like, I'm sure. No. And then as of the time of this recording, we didn't even talk about this. Did you see Al went on Jimmy Fallon and did like a medley with Jimmy Fallon and the Roots? And they did I Want a New Duck.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
I saw it. I was like, oh God, maybe I was wrong. Maybe this is
look,
a precious.
I've said something about Weezer and Green Day, and I will say this about Weird Al too, which is like, I used to say that Green Day and Weezer at their worst are still better than a lot of bands at their best. And like, that's my perspective on Al. Like, the worst Al song, which in this case could very well be I Want a New Duck, is still better than so many comedy albums that I have sat through.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And again, I mean, look, obviously we're not doing this podcast because we like making fun of Weird Al.
No,
I'm sure anyone who's listened to any amount of this show, including this episode, has become clear. No, I mean, and again, like we said, we're ranking the songs. Something's got to be at the bottom. It's just how it goes. And, this song does not particularly resonate with me, but, I know that it does for a lot of people, and that's great.
I all I'll say is Al at his worst, let's say Buckingham Blues, for example, or I Want a New Duck, or I Got a Boogie, I would say is on par.
Got a Boogie is still, you're still really wrong about that one, I have to say.
I know, but whatever. Take any of those three songs, I would say that they are as good, if not a little bit better, than whatever the funniest Adam Sandler song is on any one of his albums. Like, and I love those Adam Sandler comedy albums, but I really truly believe that like Al at his worst is still about as good as Adam Sandler's musical comedy at its best.
Taking shots at Adam Sandler, who will never do our podcast. It's been a long time since I've gone back to those Adam Sandler records, which again, probably for you, same as me, as a young, probably even preteen at that point. Those records were gold and were passed around like illegal currency in my school because I was not allowed
like
to have that stuff. Yeah. No, seriously. Yes. If you like knew someone who could loan you their cassette of What the Hell Happened to Me, that was like such a big deal because that was not allowed in my house. That's for sure.
I used to think that that album had the largest parental advisory sticker I had ever seen on it. Like it is like a quarter of the album.
Seriously.
It's like a giant warning to parents of like, this should not be consumed by children, which was weird because children were the main people that would find them funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Little did they know. Yeah. The bigger the parental advisory sticker, the more the kid was like, yes, I need to hear this.
Yeah. Oh, the bigger the appeal for sure.
Give it to me.
But yeah, no, I mean, you know, sometimes Al just,
sometimes it's just one of those days.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get.
That's right. That's it. Sometimes, you know, it's just one of those days.
Where you don't want to wake up, everything is fucked and everybody sucks.
Hey, you know what? Maybe that's... Did Fred Durst hear this and go, yeah, that's a good idea.
This is actually, we should have hit up Fred. This is probably his favorite Weird
Al song. Fred's favorite Weird
Al
song led to his biggest hit. No credit. Did you know that Fred Durst, according to sources I have, like openly, brazenly stole the Tender Heart in a Blender line from Eve 6 and put it into Nookie? And like admitted it to Max in person.
Yeah, told Max. He's like at a urinal, I believe the story is.
Yeah, that's the story, right? What a guy. So yeah, maybe he did that with this song too. That, you know what? History officially, something we do on this podcast is we rewrite history. Here it is. It is thanks to this song that we have Limp Bizkit's seminal Break Stuff. Update your Wikipedias.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-oh! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.